Hello, and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast, where we talk with nurses working at the intersection of health and environment. My name is Beth Shank. I'm a registered nurse in Missoula, Montana, and hosting today's podcast. Today, our guest is Lois Wessel. Lois Wessel is a family nurse practitioner and also an instructor at the School of Nursing at Georgetown University. In addition, she is employed and contributes to the Pediatric Environmental Health Specialty Unit in the Mid-Atlantic region. Lois, it's nice to talk with you today.
Thank you, Beth. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So tell me about how you got started as a nurse and why you're interested in environmental health and how you've gotten to where you are at this point.
Great. Yeah, I think I'd probably say we all got started in our careers when we were born. And I would have to say my biggest role models in life were my parents. My mother was a community-based social worker. My father was a community-based pediatrician, and they taught me the value of making the world a better place. One of the things my father got involved with during my childhood was, and this was in the 60s in New England, where he saw a lot of patients in his pediatric practice with high lead levels. And he got involved with legislative work at the national level, at the federal level, to remove the lead from gasoline as well as paint. And advocated for children's access to services if they did have elevated lead. So I like to say that working in environmental health is literally in my blood. I think it's also important when we think about the time period that somebody grew up with. I grew up in the age of discussion about nuclear weapons and the nuclear power movement, and spent much of my adolescence and teenagehood protesting at Three Mile Island and other nuclear power plants, because there were older people in my life who had seen the effects of nuclear war in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and felt that nuclear power was a bad thing. We also were very much aware of Agent Orange and the effect that defoliant had on soldiers who came back from Vietnam. So I would say it was the combination of growing up in the 60s, a very politically charged time, and having the example that we need to respect the world and make the world a better place for everybody. And as we know, with so many of these environmental issues, the people who can be the most affected are the poorest people. And my work as a nurse practitioner after 10 years in Latin America, I came back and became a nurse and a nurse practitioner. It's always been with immigrant communities, mostly Hispanic, where we can see that there are so many issues around environmental justice and exposure to toxins in the environment that affect the poorest people. Obviously, the biggest example of that right now is Flint, Michigan, which actually saddens me because I felt like we had dealt with lead when I was a child in the 60s, and now I'm in my 50s, and we're still dealing with lead crises in many of our urban areas.
Yeah, they don't go away, do they? Some of them are really persistent.
Yeah.
So tell me about, are you particularly involved with pediatrics as an FNP, or is that more just in your work at the PESU?
With the PESU, we are definitely more involved with pediatrics and, as you know, reproductive health. But as a full-scope family nurse practitioner, I do care for people through the lifespan. Many of my patients throughout the years have been Hispanic day laborers who have been hired to do everything from remove poison ivy to remove asbestos with no training and with no advocacy for their workplace exposure to toxins. You know, some of these are guys who are just hanging on the street corner and somebody picks them up and says, go pull out my weeds, without any kind of education around that. And so I do see people throughout the lifespan who have been affected by environmental issues. And I think, as we know, with climate change, we're certainly seeing more respiratory issues across the board, from pediatrics through COPD and things with older people.
I also know that you're working some with healthy food systems. Tell us about that.
I'm glad you brought that up. I am on the board of a pretty impressive community organization called the Crossroads Community Food Network. Crossroads believes in building an inclusive food system, meaning that we're protecting both the consumers of food and the workers of food. So we have a farmers market in a low-income Hispanic community outside of Washington, D.C. We were the first farmers market in the entire country to double the WIC and the SNAP coupons, or the food, what we used to call food stamps, but supplemental nutrition benefits and the WIC benefits. And we look at many issues in the food market. And one of them is we are bringing in food from a very from close in, or in fact, the carbon footprint of our farmers is very small. Maybe many of our farmers are urban farmers who are growing food 5 and 10 miles away from where the food is sold. As part of this program, we also have a healthy eating program in 2 elementary schools where we work both with parents and kids, teaching about healthy eating and teaching about eating fruits and vegetables, as well as a micro enterprise training program, which is mostly, although not exclusively, immigrant food entrepreneurs who come to our community kitchen and get job training in food safety and how to start a food business. And many of them are using the community kitchen to prepare foods which are sold in some local stores and at local events. And so it's a way of building job capacity for immigrants in the community. And so what I really love is we're working with children and vegetables and moms and babies, and have food demonstrations at the farmers market, and are supporting organic farmers who are local to our area, and building economic capacity in our community. So it really touches on many of the issues that are near and dear to me and that I think are important in a community.
Right. And it's just so full of co-benefits to think of the reducing the carbon impact of the food while providing more nutritious food and more meaningful food in a way.
Yeah. And one of the things that strikes me, and maybe all of us, when we come home from the supermarket, is how much waste we bring home from the supermarket. You know, things are wrapped in plastic. And given that it's the winter now, our farmer's market is not functioning in the winter. And I brought some fruit and vegetables the other day for my family and ended up throwing out a lot of plastic, the bag that the tangerines came in and the little plastic container that the tomatoes came in. And I like that in the spring, summer, and fall, when we go to the farmer's market, we are not creating more waste by buying our food, which tends to be what happens in the supermarket, certainly in the big box stores.
I'm curious about, are you doing biometric measurement at all? Are you measuring direct health impacts from this program?
That's an excellent question. So we have a group called CHEER, and I'd have to look up what it stands for, but it's a community group that works closely with the hospitals and with the federally qualified health centers. And they are tracking some of the metrics, mostly around blood pressure and hemoglobin A1Cs for some of the users in the farmers market. So the consumers. So we are in coordination with another group that's doing more of those metrics.
Cool. And then also, is this an opportunity for your students? Are they involved in that? Or how do you, more broadly, how do you bring environmental health to your students?
Okay. Certainly, I invite all my students to come to my farmer's market because honestly, the day that I go and there's Hispanic music, a lot of folk musicians play there. So between Hispanic music, fresh fruit and vegetables, and a local ice cream maker who makes tropical I feel like in Hispanic moms and babes, I feel like I've died and gone to heaven. But we certainly talk about environmental influences in our nurse practitioner program, starting from the beginning, where we look at prevention and screening throughout the lifespan. And so with respect to screening, many people, and I'm finding because our program is online, we have about 500 or 600 students across the country at any one time in different parts of the progression in the program. Many of them have limited knowledge of things that we might think about in a more urban area, such as 2 lead screens by the age of 2. And so in screening, we talk about all the environmental things that should be screened for. I'm always looking that students do an environmental assessment when they're looking at at patients. Where do they work? What are they exposed to? What are their hobbies? In fact, I had a student recently who wrote about a patient whose mom worked in a nail salon. Mm-hmm. And I brought that up as an occupational exposure that could have affected the child in utero and could certainly affect the child if she's hanging out in the nail salon with her mother. And so throughout their career, we look at occupational exposure as well as exposure from lifestyles. Do they ride their bike to work? So we talk about sun prevention, sunscreen use. What are their hobbies? Could they be exposed to something in their hobbies? And so we spread it out throughout the curriculum, and I've begun to rely more on Annie's textbook and get some excerpts from the environmental health textbook. Honestly, I think we could be doing more to address environmental health with our students. Unfortunately, in a quick nurse practitioner program, there's a lot of training on caring for people throughout the lifespan, and I think we could integrate more environmental health teaching. And as we move towards the terminal degree in our nurse practitioner program being a doctoral degree, I think we'll be able to do that.
Terrific. Yeah, I think, you know, particularly from undergrad nurses, what we're learning is that most have very little information about it provided. Some programs, they may touch on it in community health, and the students may hear nothing else. I do lecturing on the environmental impacts of healthcare itself, so pollution from healthcare, and people
right.
have just never thought of it, you know, for the most part. So I hope that that continues to grow across the nation. I think it is.
Right. And I always bring up models that I've seen. And one of the advantages of being in an online program with students across the country is I get to travel to see my students. And so I've seen some pretty amazing examples. For example, there's a community health center in Middletown, Connecticut that has a green roof when they grow herbs and plants up there. And when the patients are waiting for their appointment, they can go upstairs and they can garden and they can pick some herbs to take home. And then the provider will say, gee, I see you got some mint. You know, you can chop that up and put it in a salad and it makes your salad taste really good. And I've seen many ways that healthcare facilities are addressing green practices within the health centers. And so that's exciting, although I do agree with you that we could be doing a lot more around the workplace. And in fact, I've been struggling with my federally qualified health center just to get people to acknowledge that recycling is a concept, you know, because I see commingling of things that shouldn't go in their recycling and people kind of shrug their arms about it. So I think that we do have a long way to go on that.
Right. So tell me about some what else you're working on, or if this is a more helpful question, what are you most concerned about right now?
Well, let me back up to something I'm working on because okay. it was something, and I'll tell you why I came to this. In 2015, I did a nurse leadership fellowship sponsored by the Duke School of Medicine and Johnson & Johnson, and we had to they sort of led us through a quality improvement project over the course of a year as part of this fellowship. And I struggled with what I was passionate about because I was passionate about so many things. But I also felt like many of the things that I'm concerned about are because we're not moving in the right direction. I felt like I needed to do something that felt a little bit more positive. And one of the things I got involved in is the concept of prescribing time outdoors for patients. And it's because of the health benefits of being outdoors and moving around. And, you know, we know that that being in the environment lowers your cortisol levels and it can improve depression. And if people are outdoors enough and fall in love with the outdoors, it may lead them to hiking and other things that get them outside. But I think it's not only about patients being outside and all the health benefits for being outside. I think the more people we are able to show the benefits of being outside, the more those people will become advocates for the environment. So an example of that is I did a training with some Hispanic health promoters in an urban Hispanic social service agency about things that they could do to work with their patients or their clients and go outside and urban trails they could take people for walks on. And they said, you know, it's really important if we're outdoors and we're with our clients that we also clean up the park because we don't want to have the reputation of the people who have littered in the park. So if we're going to go out there with people, we're not going to just make it a walk for our health. We're going to make it a cleanup day in the park and take care of our parks. And I was inspired by that because we are facing so many challenges in environmental health and in social justice in general in this country right now that bringing the community into something that was positive and that would engage them and to become advocates for the environment was really important to me. And so I've continued with that work on talking about getting patients outside and how we can do that. In fact, there's a pediatrician in DC who was able to create a database with many of the public parks in the district and link them with their clinic's electronic health record. And so if you put in your zip code and that you like to play basketball, it'll come up with all the parks in your zip code where there's a basketball court, and then you can give that to patients. So I find that an exciting way of looking at many of the issues that my patients face, diabetes and hypertension and other sequelae of obesity, as well as getting people to appreciate and fall in love with the outdoors and then advocate for the outdoors.
That's really cool. And also I would think it builds some opportunity for social life, socialization, getting people out less lonely.
Yeah,
perhaps.
I mean, we know that there's an EPA statistic that say people spend 90% of their time indoors. When we talk about environmental justice, you know, for many poor people, it's not safe to go in the park by their house. But the more people are out there, the safer it is. I mean, I always tell my students, my computer overlooks a park, a children's park adjacent to where I live. And in the afternoon while I'm teaching online, I see kids in the park. And my kids certainly went into that park when they were little and still do. And it's, you know, it's as safe as it can be. I'm not concerned about their safety in the park, other than the normal safety of a kid falling down. And so I think a lot of poor people don't have that opportunity to have safe parks. And so one of the things we've been able to do in this is to talk about the more people that are in a public space, the more the public can take it over and, you know, get the drug dealers out of the park. We've had a couple of really amazing examples of that in DC. There's an enormous park on 16th Street, which, if you remember your DC geography, is the one that goes right down to the White House. It's called Meridian Hill Park. And 20 years ago, it was a bad place. You didn't want to be there. And now it's families and it's soccer and it's somebody playing the guitar, and the people really have taken back that park. So I try to focus on those positive things in this difficult time. Because you did ask me about my concerns about health and the environment. And, you know, I would say my biggest concern right now is the rolling back of previous regulations from places like the EPA, like the Clean Power Plant and other regulations. And the Clean Power Plant, as you know, was to reduce coal emissions. I'm concerned about this administration's clear lack of understanding of evidence-based science, and that, yes, climate change is real, and many of the things that we are doing are increasing climate change. And so a year and a half ago, my concerns may have been different, but my biggest concern right now is some of the people in the administration who are not adhering to the principles that we believe in with respect to making the environment a safe place.
Yeah, that's a pretty big concern. And what is your approach to that? I mean, I've heard some of what you've said. You have a very broad-minded and a positive approach, it sounds like, that you're working on solutions. What other, activities or conversations you have even with your students about mitigating that particular concern, the concern of our loss of leadership and our not using science and, you know, really rolling back some of our protections?
Right. Well, I think there's three things. I always point the students on whatever the issue is back to the evidence. So if they say something and you know, I struggle with this, and maybe you do too as an instructor, like they might write something in paper. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Yes. But what is the evidence? So really understanding what evidence-based medicine is or what evidence-based science is something that I try to foster as a instructor of nursing. But I also really push students to be involved at a level they feel comfortable with in political activism. And as we know, nursing is the number one most trusted profession. And so when you say, as a nurse, I think, dot, dot, dot. So I encourage them to go to their city council meetings and talk about an issue that's important to them, regardless of what it is. You know, maybe the closing of the local hospital. It may be where they're going to build a school. It may be that they want to cut trash pickup days from, you know, one day a week to one day a month or whatever. I encourage them to get involved in their local communities and use their voices as nurses. I feel like right now, because of where we're at the national level, we need to embrace what is going on in local communities. And there's an amazing amount of work going on, and many things are important to the environment, including in my town. We've banned the use of pesticides on lawns. And so getting people to do what they can at their local level is something that I focus on. But we know the power of the federal level is huge. And I think that this has been a really exciting last couple of weeks with seeing how much student involvement and student engagement there is with with being involved politically, and certainly we've seen it in the last couple of weeks around gun control. I was reflecting that these are the kids, like my own kids, who grew up with Obama as president, frankly, and in part because of where I live in D.C., there were in a progressive community right outside of D.C. in Maryland. There are many people who worked closely with the Obama administration. In fact, we had three cabinet members in our neighborhood. But and I think of my daughter who's 16. So, you know, most of her life was under Obama. And I think this is a new generation of kids who are probably doing the most powerful thing that can be done right now. And that's registering to vote. In my city, you can vote in the city at age 16. But what that means is when you register to vote at 16, you're already registered to vote in the federal elections and in your state election when you're 18. So I think that the political activism of youth is giving me hope, but all of us need to work on making things better in our local communities. It doesn't take away from the work we do at the national level, but there can be a lot of important change coming about locally right now, and I that's something I focus on with my students. And as I said, again, they're across the country, so I hear a variety of different things that are going on in their communities.
That's great. Those are great tips about how people can get involved and specifically how nurses can get involved. I really echo your statement about nurses having the most trusted voice. And again, wherever I go, people really relate to what nurses say, largely because we usually have an example. Well, I have this patient who, and so that becomes important.
Yeah.
Do you have any other ideas specifically about nurses? Sometimes nurses associations or student nurses associations or Annie, anything else you would throw out there as ways for nurses to be involved?
I mean, I know this is an area that you've worked on a lot and something I thought about and haven't worked on as much as I'd like to, but I really think we need to embrace the idea of the, for lack of a better word, the greening of our hospitals or the greening of our health centers and what that means in the broad sense. So one of the things we're looking at with our farmers market is, can we supply some of the food? The market is about three blocks from a small but powerful local hospital. I'm not sure how many beds it has. It's known as a heart hospital. It's run by the Seventh-day Adventists. And so we're talking to them about supplying the fruits and vegetables in the hospital. And if you know anything about Adventists, they've sort of come out of a vegetarian, healthy eating tradition. Nutrition is a big component of their philosophy. But I talk to students about many ways that we can promote a healthier behavior within our workplaces. So, for example, Georgetown has bike share station, which are these shared bikes. You pay a yearly fee. And in fact, if you work for Georgetown, you get a reduced fee to these shared bikes that are all over the city. But the one parking spot for the bikes is as far from the hospital as possible. And so I've been talking to the hospital, let's get another bike share station closer to the hospital, closer to the nursing school and the med school. And I think there are things that we can do to not only set examples for our patients, but also to set examples for our colleagues or think creatively about ways to make places that are supposed to be helping with health really healthier environments. I am shocked, as I mentioned, I work at a cervical and breast cancer screening program at Georgetown. It's grant funded. It meets once a month for uninsured Hispanic women to come in and get some of their women's health needs met. And it's on a Saturday, and I'll come in through kind of a back door in the hospital at Georgetown. All the lights are on, all the computers are on, the TVs are on, and it's empty. The whole place is empty. There are not patients being seen there on the weekend, except for in our one little area. And I think that those are things that we need to have nurses start addressing to be part of the nursing role of taking care of individuals, patients, and communities and the planet, and looking at ways that the work that we do has an impact on our carbon footprint. And as we think about building new facilities, making sure they're adhering to green building practices, you know, can we make our hospitals LEED certified? So I think that there's so many different ways that nurses can get involved. I also think that probably one of the biggest entrees for nurses is around the issue of asthma and respiratory diseases, because I think everybody you talk to has either had a patient and or a family member who's seen an increased number of acute exacerbations of asthma or COPD in the last couple of years. And I think that that's often an entree to getting people to talk about the environment. You know, do you know about your local air quality? Do you know why the air quality can be bad? You know, here's a website you can go to the look at your air quality. Yes, you're right. It can be bad because we have too many cars. Are there things that we can do to not be in our car so much and kind of open up the discussion? I always say to my students, we can't solve things in the four walls of the exam room. And I really kind of encourage people to think outside of the box and some of these other ideas that that hopefully will become as commonplace as, you know, now we all wear seatbelts in the car, and that didn't happen when I was a kid. And so I hope we'll, you know, most hospitals will be greener by the time my kids are grown up.
Right. Yeah, I hope that too. It's so important to connect those dots about the individual expression of illness in their larger context. And I do think nursing does that pretty well. And yet I also encounter pretty frequently that nurses are get really focused on the one patient in front of them and don't always remember that. It sounds like you do a really nice job of explaining that and keeping it in mind with the students you work with.
Sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, swimming against the tide, but I do try to bring that up, and I hopefully am getting somewhere with that. I also think that because I do end up seeing a lot of refugee patients, I always bring up with my colleagues, you know, many of the reasons why they're fleeing or why some of these wars are going on is because there's just not enough food, and people are fighting for access to food and water. And why do we have these food crises in different parts of the world? And to put, you know, refugees in a broader context of why people have to flee, and it may be economic and it may be, you know, in part environmental, so that we think of this as a global problem and not just an individual problem.
Right, exactly. Well, boy, that's just great, Lois. You're an inspiring teacher, I can tell. And it's really nice to hear your perspective and your approach. Is there anything else you want to add today?
Well, I would just like to add to anybody who has listened to the end that, you know, I think if all of us got five people to get out and vote in the next election, that would be a good thing. And it may be getting them registered, and it may be driving them to the polls. I know I live near a senior citizen facility, and I often drive seniors to the polls. But I think that one of the things we need to do sooner rather than later is get more people engaged in the voting process. And I think a good example of that, even if you believe that elections don't do very much, is the fact that this administration pulled out of the Paris Agreement early on. And I believe at the time there were three countries who hadn't signed on to the Paris Agreement on climate change. And now there's only one, or there were three once the United States pulled out, and now there's only one, and it's the United States. And that just shows you the difference a person in charge can make that most of us don't agree with. And so I'd say get out there and use your voice in the ballot box so we can turn this thing around as we continue to work in our communities for more community gardens and more access to bike trails and the kind of things that make everybody's life better on a day-to-day basis.
That's great. I second that. Terrific. Well, thanks so much for your time, Lois. And thank you all for listening to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. Check us out at Environ, that's ENVIRN.org. And also please leave a review for us on the Apple Podcasts on iTunes. Talk to you next time.